What was the Protestant Reformation all about? Does it even matter? Hi, I'm Pastor Mike Brown of Christ United Reformed Church in Santee, and we invite you to a free conference on Saturday, November 1st. Speakers include Dr. Michael Horton, Dr. R. Scott Clark, and Dr. W. Robert Godfrey, all professors at Westminster Seminary, California. For more information on this free one-day conference, visit ChristURC.org. That's ChristURC.org.
A time of rightly dividing the word of truth. Welcome to Abounding Grace. Abounding Grace Ministries, here is our pastor and teacher, Chris Gordon.
Well, thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. Today we're going to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 to look at the marriage relationship as God has designed it. There are challenging things here, but I always have to say that it's important to listen to what God has said and what He has designed so that our marriage relationships would be healthy, reflecting the very intention that God had for them at the beginning. Today we're looking at sexual morality, how that has affected the marriage, what the Lord's design is for a man and a woman in the marriage. It's really a beautiful chapter, and I hope a help to you, especially if you are a married couple, or even we're going to be looking at those who are single and desire marriage. There's a lot of great instruction here, and I hope that it's a blessing to you in these struggles. God has an answer for you. God has not left you alone. And I hope that 1 Corinthians 7 today gives some clarification in a world of just chaos when it comes to the issue of sex and marriage and these sort of things, all the filth that is thrown at us Christians. Here we have sanity and clarity and something beautiful presented to us under the inspiration of the Spirit by God Himself. And I hope today on 1 Corinthians chapter 7, this is a blessing to you on marriage as God intended.
1 Corinthians chapter 7, the first 9 verses. Now concerning the matters about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights and likewise the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now, as a concession, not a command, I say this: I wish that all were as I myself am. But each one has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it's good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. For it's better to marry than to burn with passion. There ends the reading of God's word. In my years of doing premarital counseling, I have gone through Wayne Mack's book on preparing for marriage God's way. And I have had the privilege of doing a lot of weddings, officiating at a lot of weddings in my years. And in that book, Mac has an entire section at the very end on sex as God intended. And in that chapter, he asks some very pointed questions. Some of the questions are like this: what was your parents' view of sex? Did they talk to you about it? Officiating a lot of weddings and asking those questions and going through that book with couples, you would not believe how many times, in fact, I'd rate it in the 90s in percentage, that I came across of those entering into marriage that their parents never talked to them about these things. Never. And then they never demonstrated any kind of affection. Whether it be a hug or a kiss, it just was non-existent in the marriage. And they saw little of these things between mom and dad. There was this Victorian weird piety among us. And I thought to myself, have we ever thought about the consequences of that? Have we ever thought about the consequences of that? It's a strange phenomenon that we could watch things on TV, we can see it everywhere, we can have the world present its views on this and sex and morality to us and our children, and, you know, from the pulpit to the people, silence. Silence. It's hypocritical. It's hypocritical. And what has been the consequence? The consequences are somewhat more severe than you realize. That's why I say children need this. To keep them away paves the way for major problems down the road. Major. If we're acting afraid of this, and not just that, if we close our mouths or close our ears in super pious ways, you know what this does? It produces in our children a sense that this is the one area of life that is wrong and dirty, that is evil, that is embarrassing, and that we don't talk about as Christians. Here's the problem. You've got young people with a lot of hormones flying around. And like it or not, uncomfortable as it may be, we are sexual creatures. And if we don't talk to them about these things, if we never provide a corrective, if our children grow up not knowing how to interpret the lusts and the problems that they're dealing with on the inside because of the silence of parents, they're wondering what's wrong with them. And they have no ability and no understanding except what the world presents to them to fix it. What are they to do with these things? And how has God answered these things? What provision did God make to fulfill what is obviously a natural drive for people, a natural drive in us as human beings? What are we to teach them? Well, that's what Paul sees as a great benefit to everyone tonight in teaching about marriage. So I say up front, our silence is harmful to our children. Why? You learned in Romans, the law arouses sin. In other words, what happens in Christian circles when somebody constantly says to their children, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, or they see from their parents, we don't talk about that, we don't talk about that? Well, use alcohol. Alcohol sinful, alcohol sinful, alcohol sinful. Statistics shows in those homes, in those children, the greatest problem of alcoholism exists. Huh. The same is true in dealing with this issue. Very much so. And God, when God's answers are not given, when God's answers are not provided, and we present this in disgust and remain silent, our children's minds have no corrective. They've got to be trained. We've got to give them what they're, of course, they can handle and what their abilities are, but we don't want them feeling guilty about what they are struggling with. Talk to them. They're natural desires, and God has a remedy. Well, in our ever pious approach to sexuality, we aren't so much different than first century Corinth, which has been a fascinating thing to study. Over and over, we see all these things coming out. Strangely enough, another problem developed in Corinth. Another problem with regard to the issue of sex, and it was this. That needs to be avoided then altogether, even in the marriage relationship. It was viewed as dirty and defiling. They were early Victorians. And what Paul does at this point is answer some questions that they wrote to him about this. They had questions, and you'll notice that in verse 1, that verse 1 begins, that he says, now concerning the things of which you wrote to me. So Paul is answering questions tonight. That's what chapter 7 is, and we have to remember that. He's answering questions to provide a help to them in these struggles to correct their view of marriage and a correct view of the sexual relationship. That's his goal in chapter 7. He wants to help them and give them a preventative to stop particular sins that are going on. But these are specific questions. And some people look at 1 Corinthians as a comprehensive treatment on marriage relationship, and that's why they run into problems. We'll definitely see that with divorce and remarriage. Here, what we have here, this is not what it is. He's being very specific. He's dealing with specific divorce issues. As we look at this, You know, even tonight about these particular subjects that he's dealing with, you may have a lot of questions. You may have questions, and this just inevitably comes. Well, what about this scenario, and what about that scenario? And that takes wisdom. That takes elders sometimes. Sometimes it's not always so neatly packaged and fits into the categories that we want to make it all fit. That's why God gives us elders. That's why we have elders that discern facts and help people. Well, tonight, that is Paul's goal here, is to help them with their questions. And we can learn a lot through this about God's design for marriage. We can learn about a lot through it, what he put in place, how we are to think about this very important issue that we all have faced. We're all here because of it, by the way. And tonight, that's what we're doing. We're considering the blessing of this in marriage, the sexual act. We're considering his directions for those who are married and those who are, that we might honor the goal and design that he has put in place, that God originally intended from the beginning. So in verse 1 again, it says, "Now concerning the matters about which you wrote, they had sent some kind of communication to him," and you see that in what follows. They asked him about sexual relations with a woman. You see it there. As a matter of fact, it says right up in verse 1 there, "It is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman." That's what they were asking about. Paul, is that okay? Is it good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman? Paul says, now concerning that issue that you wrote to me about. So it was going around in Corinth that it was preferable that men and women not do this. And you say, what gives? In the last section, he just had an entire treatment, extensive treatment, about the problem of sexual immorality in Corinth. And you say, what in the world? Now he's dealing with the question of celibacy? I mean, that's one extreme to the other here. What is this? I have to say, before I move on to this and answer that, 1 Corinthians 6, the end there, was so edifying in studying and preaching. I loved his answer that the way to combat sexual immorality is to understand that your body as a Christian, which is good, which God made, has been joined to Christ. It is now Christ's body. It belongs to him. He purchased it. He made it. And we need to view our bodies that way. You would never want to take that body and do anything to that body that would join something perverse to him. It means what you put on your body, what you do to your body, how you treat your body. Every thought now goes to, it's joined to Christ. It's Christ's body. Belongs to him. He purchased it. Beautiful. Well, we all know that sexual morality was a huge problem in Corinth. Why is Paul now answering what seems to be the opposite? Celibacy. That some in Corinth were proposing that celibacy was the answer. Well, we know this problem somewhat. Think of the situation. We all know sexual morality is running out of control in our society. What's our response? Our response is, we don't talk anything about that. We don't talk anything about that. We shut up about that. And what we see throughout history and what we see in people is, and I've seen this in my ministry, you just want balanced people who aren't flopping from extreme to extreme to extreme to extreme all the time. They're all over the map. And you'll notice, I mean, just stability in the Christian life is a lot today. Just to be stable where you are and what you believe and not running here and there, I just can't say that enough. I've been amazed in my short time as a pastor how much instability I've seen in people and that I fight against. Well, something happened in Corinth, something similar. Remember last time there were those who were saying that what really matters is your spirit and that you're really imprisoned in this lower body. It's a prison house for what really matters, which is your soul. And that led to the idea that it doesn't really matter what you do in your body. Those were the libertines. Indulge yourself. It's the same kind of mentality today of those who say, listen, You don't tell me how to live. Don't tell me what to do. I will go do whatever I want. You can't judge me. It's all for what feels good. It's the same thing, just with a different label. You'll know this by the mentality that Paul even encountered in Acts 17 with the certain Epicurean and Stoic philosophers, who the Epicureans lived to maximize pleasure. They were hedonists. And then you had the other common thought of the day, which is now what Paul's dealing with. The Greeks also believed that bodily urges should be suppressed and that there should be abstinence. They would have said that these kinds of sexual promiscuous drive should be suppressed, and that helps someone preserve the soul from defilement. It keeps the soul from defilement. And that shows that you're truly pure when you can master these kinds of drives. And so you had an entire movement, movements spring up in history, ascetic movements, and people running out to the, you know, to the hills and into the communes, whatever you want to say, the Stoics. You know, there was the Stoics and all of these different groups that were very sectarian, and they did their own thing, and they lived this very monastic, hard life of self-denial. Well, immediately after the teaching on fornication, Paul now deals with the question that's posed. Maybe it's just better if we follow that. Because of all the problems, maybe it's just better that celibacy is the answer. And that led to the Roman view that priests, of course, you know, they would look at this, that the priesthood forbidding marriages to priests. And Paul now develops and answers this particular problem. When we understand that this was a problem that he's specifically answering, it's really a pretty clear passage. I actually found it to be just so clear, but I guess kind of challenging just to say. They wrote with the celibacy idea in mind, saying it's good for a man not to touch a woman. That's the ideal then, Paul. That's maybe what we should be doing. And Paul immediately responds by saying what? Because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. Look, the reality is that men and women struggle with sexual temptation. And notice it's not just the man here. Men and women struggle with this. Men and women have this problem. You all have it, unless you're the exception, and I'll get there. Sexual drive is real. And every night in the news, if you want to deny that, just go on and look at all of the terrible things that's happening due to sexual immorality run rampant. In fact, Paul says that in verse 26. He'll talk about this problem creates a present distress. Look at that, a present distress. All the perversions in this particular arena and these particular sins. And Paul's real about this. Paul's real about discussing the drive in us and the challenges with this. And he's saying here something that's really important for us tonight. What he's saying is the marriage relationship God specifically designed. And one of the great blessings, one of the benefits of the marriage relationship, is that this drive is to be satisfied within the confines of that marriage relationship. He created it. God created this. God made this. Paul's not just saying that. He's not just saying God gave you a platform to satisfy your lust. That's not ultimately what he's just saying. Sure, marriage relationship, he is saying, is intended to curb the problem of sexual morality, absolutely. And if you struggle with this and you burn, he'll say, if you cannot control that drive and that manifests itself in many different ways, then marriage is for that. You don't want to live in sexual immorality. That's sinning against God. But it's not just that the drive is satisfied. Notice what he says in verse 3. The husband should do what? The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights, and likewise, the wife to her husband. And then he goes on to say that the wife and the husband are to sacrificially think about their bodies. Now remember, body's a big emphasis here in 1 Corinthians 6 and 7. You are to sacrificially think about your bodies. In that way, in the relationship. Now here's what I want to say. This is not to be viewed in the marriage relationship as a burden. This is not. It never was intended to be. But I believe what Paul says here is that the design of marriage is that the act of sex is to be enjoyed as a gift from God. A gift from God. Something right, something proper, healthy to your marriage, enjoyed, and that each of us is to understand that our bodies, which are one with our spouses, what God has joined together, let not man separate, are one with the spouses, are to be used to fulfill what God designed to be enjoyed. Without which, serious problems come. In fact, Paul sees this as so normal to marriage life, something, and I say this, in the normal circumstances, I emphasize that. I understand there's always exceptions and certain challenges. But in the normal circumstances of life, in the normal circumstances of marital life, something is to be constantly happening between the man and the woman. And notice how Paul says it, that the only real exception would be to stop for a season if, and this is only if, you decided that you wanted to fast and pray and give yourself to devotion to the Lord. But even in that, the tone here is, be really careful about that. That can only be done for a time if you mutually agree, but you need to come back together again real soon. You ever heard teaching on this? You know, this is my struggle this week, you understand. But do you see how integral? Do you see how integral and healthy and beautiful the apostle understands this to be in the marriage relationship? That's what we first have to come to grips with. You got to pull out the Victorian idea. This is beautiful. This is not dirty. And Paul wants us to think, the Lord wants us to think about this. He inspired this. Especially young couples. Guess what? Greatest divorce rates come where? That age group, 20 to 30. And you repeatedly hear in those marriages of those divorcing, there's no intimacy. None. The loss of intimacy and no desire has severe consequences on a marriage. It does. Men don't understand this. Women, often more so, don't understand this. And Satan loves marriages like this. I have to say this tonight. Satan loves marriages like this. Why? Well, Paul says that when this is not properly in place, Satan works on one of the parties who has that strong drive to not having it fulfilled. And guess what he does? Guess what he does? He tempts them. Now think about everything we learned from Joseph this morning and Potiphar's wife. All of a sudden, there comes some woman who throws herself before a man who has no relationship with his wife. There comes some charmer who says everything a woman never hears from her husband because the relationship's broken. Do you think Potiphar and his wife had a healthy relationship? You think there was love? On the authority of God's word, in the normal circumstances of marriage, it is a biblical responsibility of the man and the woman in the marriage relationship to think sacrificially and give yourselves this way to enjoy it as God designed it. I know no other way to say this tonight. That's exactly what Paul's saying here. And to not do so opens up the door of temptation towards all sorts of things, Paul says, because of a lack of self-control. Now, that's never to be an excuse for those things. But what has to be realized is that the self-sacrificial love that has to be in place, when it's gone, and a husband is to love his wife, when it's gone, you've opened the door. You've opened the door to problems. And this fits the whole design of thinking of ourselves and putting our interests before, putting the interests of others before ours, especially our spouse, right? In the marriage relationship, putting the wife's interests before yours, husband's, is what the Lord wants. Wives, putting your husband's interests before yours is what he wants, that this beautiful design would be fulfilled. And God wants you to know that in his eyes, this is beautiful.
Well, that was part one of Marriage as God Intended. Tomorrow, we're going to come back. We'll look at a part of that again and then consider Paul's instructions for those who are single and desire to be married, and for those widows and widowers who feel loneliness and also desire marriage. Paul has helpful instruction for you here under the inspiration of the Spirit, and we're going to tackle that tomorrow. These are important issues in our day. I can't say that enough. These are important issues. We have so much thrown at us from the world. The devil is so sneaky. He trashes it in the world, trashes God's good design, and then he wants us to be silent about it in the church. And let me tell you, the Lord has a lot to say to encourage us and help us through the craziness and the mess of the, and through the distortion that has happened in the marriage relationship. And I hope that we will have a great recovery again of looking back at what God has designed and repenting and turning back to him for the answer. Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. As always, we direct you to our website at agradio.org. Again, that web address is agradio.org. Download the podcast, write to us, support us if you wish. All of your support goes to continue to bring Abounding Grace Radio to you. Thanks for tuning in to Abounding Grace. May this gospel of the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and all of its glory continue to richly bless you. Well, thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. I am Pastor Chris Gordon of the Escondido United Reformed Church. You are welcome to join us for worship this Sunday at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. The web address is escondidourc.org. Escondidourc.org. Address for worship is 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.